Welcome, Space Cadets and Galaxy Rangers, to episode 55 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where all space is doubled and all speed is faster than light. I'm Tom.
I'm Rick.
I'm Ryan.
And in this show, we'll be talking about outer space, at least as it relates to pop culture and the ongoing quest for human knowledge. But first, let's fire up the retro rockets and see what the Ganzonauts have been up to since last week's episode with our usual geekly, weekly, weekly, geekly roundup. Brian, hit it.
I spent 5 of the last 7 days reading shit about Xbox One. In the last 2, I made a nice little trip to Orlando and did some geeky shit up there. The Mayhem Spooky Empire Festival, dropped by Coliseum of Comics, Sci-Fi City. Some cool stuff.
Sci-Fi City is the gaming / comic store, right?
I'm actually very pleased to report it's much more gaming than comic. I don't see a lot of that anymore.
Cool.
They had a little, you know, new wall section or a new comic wall section, but like 90% of that store was games.
Yeah, it's coming back now that you're kind of describing it. It is a mostly a game store and a good one at that.
The only thing I was disappointed is Sci-Fi City was the one with the cool like sculptures in the city in the store, wasn't it?
I believe so. Yeah,
they moved locations and I didn't get to see those. Kind of bummed.
Oh, so they're no longer they were like across from a Home Depot. They're no longer there.
They actually they moved like across the street, so they're still pretty close to that Home Depot, but they got a bigger space.
Oh wow!
And it's, you know, they'd only been there like a week, so maybe they're moving the statues eventually. But something that I had identified with them was missing.
Hmm. Well, hopefully it makes a comeback. Wrap it up for you, sir.
Yeah.
How about you, Ricky?
I went to Disney World.
Cool.
Big surprise. I went for, there was a promotion that they're doing for the Monsters, Inc., like Monsters, Inc., Monsters University. And they were, quote, unquote, pulling an all-nighter. Full pun intended. And the park was open from 6 a.m. on Friday to 6 a.m. on Saturday. So we went up and did that. Hung out all night, rode the Haunted Mansion at like 4:30 in the morning, Space Mountain at like 5, like all kinds of cool shit. It was pretty awesome. They were having screenings of the first Monsters, Inc. movie in Tomorrowland, where you can just like grab like this glow-in-the-dark drink. It was some kind of Mike Wazowski juice, and you could just sit there, watch the movie, and hang out and had a big rave kind of party thing out in front of the castle with characters non-tethered by handlers and stuff. And they're out there like break dancing and hanging out and shit. It was really cool. And then on Saturday, we went to Saturday morning, went back to the hotel, grabbed a couple of hours of sleep, and then headed out over to Star Wars Weekends at the Hollywood Studios.
Nice.
Yeah. Ironically enough, I did not ride Star Tours. Pretty much just went in and spent a shitload of money on merchandise. Was my extent. I got a Darth Vader cupcake, a custom-made 3D-printed 7.5-inch Stormtrooper figure embossed with my own beautiful face.
Nice.
Which I will receive in 7 to 8 weeks. No speedy galactic shipping on that one. And then that was about it. I actually came home a couple days early just to hang out and do nothing and rest up for tonight's show. There you go. I cut my vacation short for the listeners.
Appreciate your commitment to a quality product, Rick.
Do what I can.
How crowded was it for the all-nighter, by the way?
Good. A good crowded. It wasn't deader than dicks, but it wasn't like wait 2.5 hours in line like the previous overnight event was. They did one on leap year. I think it was last year or this year, whenever leap year was in February. Wasn't bad at all.
Cool, yep. Man. Well, it sounds like you had a full Disney-filled weekend. I'm glad to hear that.
It was awesome.
Cool. All right, I'll fire the booster rockets up and flip over to myself. I thought I had something going with booster rockets, then I said flip over to myself. Sorry. I beat the Transformers Fall of Cybertron game for the Xbox 360. Grabbed a few achievements here and there. Was going to try for some more, but decided, no, I'm done. There was one really easy one at the end where you get to choose to be Optimus Prime or Megatron in this pivotal battle. And then you beat the game, and you get an achievement for beating it as Prime, because naturally I chose Prime. And I could have easily started it up again and played as Megatron, but I don't want Megatron to win, because he's a bad guy. So I just left it. Left it at that, put it aside, and started Mass Effect. And when I say started Mass Effect, I mean started the whole Mass Effect trilogy. It's my goal to get all three of those games done this summer. So, big gaming undertaking that I embarked on.
That was actually part of my plan for coming home early. It was part of the justification. I was like, yeah, I can get started on that game and start it right up with Tom. But yeah, lo and behold, I did not start it.
Fire it up, man. I think you'll like it. Very, very cool. Brian, have you played it?
Mass Effect?
Yeah.
Only the first one.
Yeah. I like it so far. So we'll stay posted. Maybe we can all play it together. In addition, I continued my reading of the Infinite Reality book that I've been reading the past few weeks, and it got a point that reminded me of a real-world experience that I shared with Rick. There is a part where the author is discussing basically a theme throughout the book is that virtual reality and all human entertainment is a form of mind wandering. You know, it's all entertainment is a way to divert your attention. And basically, there's a lot of research into why entertainment is so valuable to us and why constantly being distracted is so valuable to us. It's because we're like trying to divert our attention from our impending doom. We're one of the few species that we know of, or the only species that we know of, that's aware that we're going to die someday. So all of this crap we do, to include creating virtual worlds, is just an attempt to escape death. And that ties into a real-world experience I had with you, Rick, a few years ago when we went to like a club called Respectable Street in Palm Beach, and met a couple of your fans there, if I recall. And I had a drunken moment of clarity where I was chatting with one of your fans, and I mentioned, you know, I think that everything we do is just a way to like divert our attention from death. And they had no idea what I was talking about. But it turns out I was onto something in that drunken moment of clarity. And the author of this book concurs.
There you go.
There you go. A little nice little tie into some real life Ganza hangouts. I also discovered a new local comic book store here in the Capitol Hill neighborhood in Seattle where I'm at, called Phoenix Comics and Games. Went in there, the guy special ordered for me the Star Wars comic issue that I missed and put me down for a subscription to Star Wars. So I'll be picking that up there every time it comes out. And I started my simple robot project, which I will be chronicling on YouTube. The first installment of it is already on YouTube. Hopefully be putting a link to that in the show notes. And I hope to keep you all posted week to week. I just basically laid it out and got it started. And you can check it out on YouTube on the Nerd Extravaganza channel,
which is youtube.com/nerdextravaganza.
That is correct. And with my lengthy and self-indulgent weekly geekly geekly weekly roundup out of the way, we can jump into our topic for the evening, which is space. Specifically, space considered from basically two perspectives. One being space in the real world, meaning space research, exploration, technology. And the other being space as it's presented in science fiction. And we needn't discuss these in any kind of an order. We just kind of keep these two threads going and have a general conversation about space. And I thought a good way to kick things off would be to look at the way space was viewed in recent decades, both in the real world and in science fiction, versus the way it's viewed now. And I thought I'd kick off the conversation by asking a question of you guys. Do you think that we are still in the space age?
I feel like we surpassed the space age and don't give a shit anymore.
Interesting.
I kind of feel like there should be a Batman quote. You either die a hero or live long enough to be the villain. How did that go?
that sounds right enough. I'm not sure of the quote, but the quote makes sense.
The space age didn't die a hero, so we just kind of got tired of it and moved on.
So we're in the post space age now.
I believe it's technically the information age.
Yeah, I agree that it is the information age, but should the information age have been the thing that replaced the space age, or shouldn't it have been a complement to, like, an ongoing space age?
Kind of sounds like it'd come first, doesn't it?
Like the information age would come first?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, you gotta figure, without the space age, there wouldn't have been any of the propulsionary technology and whatnot to get all those satellites up in the air.
That is true.
And then we wouldn't be able to have the type of information and communication we have now.
Yeah, it's like the space age is, it fulfilled, the mission that it ended up fulfilling was allowing us to yak with one another more efficiently.
Right.
Across the planet.
To Brian's point, though, it didn't come out the hero that everybody thought it was going to be, so it kind of gets ignored. But it definitely, there's merit to anything and everything that was accomplished. It's just, it wasn't that key thing that the government was trying to throw down your throat of,
we didn't
hey,
get our
we're
going to
beat
packs.
Russia. Yeah, we didn't get rocket packs. There's not a colonized space Massachusetts and shit like that. So.
And it seems like it has definitely fallen out of the public imagination to the extent that it once occupied a prominent space there. You know, in the 50s and 60s, I think every kid probably played with rockets and thought he was going to be an astronaut. You know,
right.
And nowadays, like, what do kids want to be now? Computer programmers? I'm not really...
YouTube stars.
What did you say, Brian?
Vampires.
Yeah.
Gross. So, that's interesting.
But at the same time, we're still going to, like, Mars and stuff.
Right, we are.
We're still doing stuff.
We're still sending... Go ahead.
I remember the day that they, like, actually found life on Mars, and because it wasn't an alien, like, no one was excited,
right?
Like, because it didn't, like, waddle up and, like, you know, talk to us, take me to your leader, everybody was just like, it's a fucking bug.
Well, they found I think evidence of organic life. Did they even find, like, pond scum yet or something or anything, Brian? Or
I thought they found bacteria, didn't they?
I don't know. I think they found some definite, like, pointers to primitive life being there, but definitely not like a ray gun laying on the ground, such as a creature that you
so
just
it doesn't described. Count. Everybody
right.
was just unimpressed.
Right. You know, it strikes me that the general public is just not that interested in space. When I first saw those photos come back from, like, the Mars rover showing, like, all this, like, cool stuff they were seeing, I was like, oh, cool. And I would, like, show my friends. They were like, eh, it just looks like Arizona.
Did you wrote it into Justin Bieber?
Yeah, it's really weird how disengaged we are from the space program. And, like, when the shuttle program got shut down, I was expecting riots. And people were just like, nah, whatever, it's just a plane that goes to space.
Because they have no idea of the impact. Like, we lived before the information age. Like, we were teenagers and young kids before the information age. So the kids of today, the old people don't care, and then the young kids of today have no idea. They don't know what it's like to have lived by making plans on a phone, because you couldn't just take your phone anywhere you wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So they haven't seen the progress that a lot of the space tech has helped bring to what we take for granted every day in life now.
They just, as long as they can Instagram from anywhere, they're happy, and they couldn't care less. Yeah.
Do you remember when getting a camera was like a birthday worthy present or a Christmas worthy present? Because it was a big deal to get a camera.
I remember my first 35mm.
Right, and today
it was monumentous.
Right, and today it's like, oh, big deal. I got a cell phone. I can talk to kids in China, and I can play video games on the toilet with 18 of my friends all at the same time in better resolution and graphics than I've ever seen in any history book. who cares that there's a moon there and big deal, they went to Mars. Like, I don't think they get it. Like, I think it's purely ignorance as to why nobody cares.
Our world is so small now, the universe seems small.
Right. That's a perfect way to say it. That's what I was trying to say.
I have my moments.
Yeah, and I think that comes out of this sort of collective inward turning of our attention. You know, we're no longer... I don't know if maybe just space is just so daunting that people are just like, oh, well, you know, we can't really make any kind of a difference out there. And, you know, I want to say people, I mean civilization came to that conclusion or what. It's not like space exploration has halted, but it definitely doesn't enjoy nearly as much of the spotlight as it used to.
Well, we could also say that they learned enough to know that it's ignorant to try to throw this utopian space society down everybody's throat anymore. So why bother? Could be that too. It could just be that we've gotten smart enough, because before it was such a big mystery, nobody knew, and it was like, you know, we were kind of, no pun intended, we were shooting for the stars.
Yeah.
And when reality came, it was like, yeah, dude, we went up there. It's not going to happen. We're not building condos. Vacationing there.
What about, speaking of learning too much, what about what Hawking said, that we really might not want to encounter alien life?
Oh, because they might be hostile to us?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a fair... You know, it's a warning that's not without merit, maybe, but that's a bridge so far away. I mean, I'd like to get off of the front doorstep before we worry about crossing that bridge, you know? To even get to Mars, where we're pretty sure that nothing threatening lives, seems like a far-fetched idea now. Even though I know our long-term positioning is still to get there, I don't know if we'll be there in our lifetime as far as having a human being there. And that's a little depressing. But I didn't want this to be a depressing episode. So let's switch gears. Given that the space program program no longer occupies such a prominent spot in the popular imagination, and given that we've sort of transitioned out of the space age into the information age, what impact can we see on science fiction? Has sci-fi become more focused inward, in your opinion? For example, consider hit franchises like The Matrix. It was a future, but it was definitely a future grounded here on Earth, right? Where all of our advanced technology, you know, developed here, and there was no evidence that either the humans or the robots were escaping the confines of Earth.
Well, it feels like even regular, I mean, outside of The Matrix, like Star Trek, for instance. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see a lot of, like, Earthy-type shots there. It's not just about going to this weird unknown. In recent sci-fi, that fat has been trimmed, and it's more, like, we'll go places, but a lot of it's familiar territory.
You know, you're not wrong about that. Both of the new Star Trek movies have had a lot of focus on, I mean, I guess they've always kind of been focused on Earth, but you're right, a lot of scenes on Earth, huh? And they're kind of Earth-centric.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that stems from this new focus on what's close at hand as opposed to what's out in the distance.
Well, I mean, honestly, like when you look back at, like, some of the Star Wars lands, especially in, like, the new trilogy, some of the stuff is just kind of stupid. It feels stupid now, like it's too far-fetched. And then other stuff is extremely familiar, but a twist on it. Like Naboo is kind of like, it feels kind of normal. And Coruscant
terrifies me.
Coruscant kind of is like, you know, takes the big city role kind of thing. But then you've got the underwater where Jar Jar and the other idiots live, and that just seems like far-fetched, and I don't know. It almost seems like to have something that is out there, undiscovered, unknown, and unfamiliar, almost comes off as childlike now. Because of our knowledge of everything.
So you think we're green critters or weird robots with like, floppy arms and rotating antennas sticking out of their heads would be seen as campy now.
Yeah, childish and campy. Childish or campy, yes.
So I guess it's a familiarity with sci-fi concepts as much as it is a familiarity with like real space concepts that lead to the perception that things like that are campy and played out. I wonder if there's a way to reinvigorate the public imagination when it comes to sci-fi and when it comes to like getting people juiced about going into space.
With an easy answer would be a huge breakthrough. One of these SpaceX companies is going to come up with serviceable passage to the moon, and that'll reinvigorate.
Yeah, is the key like, yeah, is tourism maybe the key? Like, would you like, if you could take a tour to the moon, would you do it? You land on the moon and they take you out and show you around a crater, and I mean, you actually get to go to the moon. Would that be something you would do as a tourist?
Hell yeah. But I think about how expensive it is to go to Alaska. I couldn't even imagine what it would be like to go to the moon. But if it was to the point where it was affordable, and I don't mean affordable like everybody and their brother, but, you know, if it was affordable in the realm of, like, you need to save and it's a vacation, it's still an expense, but it's realistic. Hell yeah, I'd go. Who wouldn't go? I don't know.
I mean, a really good cruise is like, what, $5,000?
I think so. I have no idea. I've never taken a cruise, but it's expensive, right?
I went on a 7-day cruise to Alaska, or not Alaska, to Mexico, and it was only like $1,200 a person.
Was that like a luxury cruise, or was that like a Carnival? Or
no, that was top of the line.
Really?
Top of the line cruise lines. But, you know, we also live in Florida, so we... the ports are here, so we automatically save on airfare and travel and everything else. Because I've talked to other people, and they're instantly an extra $500 just because they have to get to Florida.
But so yeah. maybe a once in a lifetime level would be something that would. I wonder though if that would. I wonder if space being accessible to a consumer would do much to get. Would fire people up about space, other than it just being like a cool place to visit, like Hawaii. You know, it's an interesting thought. It's an interesting question to ponder.
I think seeing people like chilling on the moon, like even perhaps like the super wealthy, I think having that back in our mythos that people can go and sit on the moon for a weekend or a week or something like that would spark probably not the same enthusiasm it once did, but enthusiasm.
And what if, and maybe they could structure a thing like, hey, you know, every time you spend so much money on your moon trip, 10% of it goes into like basically a big Kickstarter pot for our Mars expedition. So you're basically funding, you know, future exploration of Mars. So you'll go to the moon, but your kid gets to go to Mars. That's
I don't know if we can sell people today on someone else benefits from you.
Yeah,
that seems a little far-fetched.
What was I thinking? Like, and somebody thinking beyond their own like nose is too much to ask already. Never mind doing something for future generations, right?
Exactly.
So there were two questions that I wanted to pose to you guys. And they pertain to how sci-fi relates to space exploration and vice versa. And so the first one is, would you guys say that science fiction today takes more or fewer cues from real space exploration and technology than it did in the past?
I would say more.
More.
And that goes back to my earlier statement of, I think that's part of the reason why they're making sci-fi movies a little bit more normal / familiar, whatever you want to call it. It's not so out there anymore because with our ability to have so much information and being past the height of the space age, we know better now. So I think it helps sell a more believable fictional story by being a little bit more realistic.
Hmm. I agree with you, Rick, especially, and again, I'm going to go back to the new Star Trek movies. When they show the close-in scenes of the Enterprise systems or like the engineering deck and everything, they look plausible. Like, yeah, that looks right. Like something people could put together. How about you, Brian?
Yeah, I think it's more also. I think we went from really early science fiction writers influencing where science went to this weird, it's magic, but it's like machine magic, so we call it science fiction. And now we're at a science fiction is actually a little learned and furthers concepts in the imagination, whether or not they're actually real or not.
I see your point, and I agree with both of you guys. I mean, as we have discovered more, there's a lot more like firm knowledge that makes for a compelling base for a sci-fi story now. Whereas if you think back to when like War of the Worlds was written and we knew next to nothing, yeah, sure, they fired a big cannon at Earth and then aliens came out of the bullet and invaded. I mean, it was pretty. What's his name? Oh, for crying out loud,
Jules Verne.
I always want to get Orson Welles and H.G. Wells, right?
Orson Welles.
Orson Welles was like, isn't that his grandkid or something?
I don't know.
I think so. Anyway, but those guys were kind of shooting from the hip. Like, we didn't really know anything. And so it was pretty remarkable that they came up with this concept of, well, we know how artillery works. So, yeah, the Martians would obviously get here by firing a massive artillery round and hitting Earth with it and then coming out of it. But now we know, you know, I guess you don't see things in sci-fi as out of step with what we know about space as you did then, because what we know about space is a lot more.
And I think we do, back to Brian's point, I think we do know a lot more because these writers would come up with these outrageous theories, ideas, and concepts. And it would spark the imagination of the scientists, and then their research avenues would point in that direction, and they would either prove, disprove, or come up with some real-life coincidence that, you know, kind of proves or enhances or, you know, justifies those theories. So,
To point out one more, a little more contemporary example of sci-fi being kind of out of step with like, sci, if you will, while the real space program was going on, we were taking our first baby steps out of our atmosphere and so on. We had taken our first baby steps, I guess you should say. You had the outlandishness of the original Star Trek series juxtaposed against that. You know, the weird critters and the I don't know. It might have just been because it was their first real crack at it, but it definitely had a much more fantastic feel to it, you know what I mean? Which in a series that was grounded in a supposed like real science future didn't fit as well as it did in like Star Wars, which is just like space fantasy, you know?
Right.
Okay, so let's flip that question around now and ask this question. Does real space exploration and technology take more or less inspiration from sci-fi than it did in the past?
I think we've already answered that question, and the answer is less.
Less, yeah. Right now, I think the sci-fi writers that are off on the edge are talking about building like crazy like space elevators and stuff that are just beyond on the cusp of, you know, what we know, which seem almost plausible. You know, either what is it? They're either talking about building like space elevators or like what's the structure that Halo's based on with the big ring world thing?
Basically,
they're out there like beyond where science can shoot them down, but they're careful not to tread too close to what we know because then their sci-fi will just seem ridiculous.
Right. But I mean, the guys in the past were really way off base, but I think the difference of why the new off base guys aren't so influential is really just simply because back in the day we knew nothing. So yeah. We kind of took anything as it could be a possibility. Now you shoot out some outrageous idea, and you could have, you know, a handful of scientists be like, well, we already know that won't work or isn't plausible because of this, and this. Mm. You know what I mean? Because we've had decades of research at this point.
Getting back to War of the Worlds for a second, and I think actually Orson Welles for a second. Speaking of what we knew and what people just believed was possible, you know, the book came out, of course, but there was also the radio broadcast.
Yeah, which was decades. What wasn't? Okay, H.G. Wells made War of the Worlds around the turn of the century or something, wasn't it?
I could look it up. I'm not really sure.
But anyway, much later. Go on. That's when his descendant, Orson, came out with the radio broadcast. So, sorry, Brian, continue.
People actually fucking believed it was happening.
Yes. Yes.
Like, they freaked out because they thought Martians had landed.
Which, let me ask you this, though. To get into the point of science, or of real science taking cues, which however way you want to look at it, science taking cues from sci-fi or vice versa. By the time that radio broadcast came out, weren't we pretty sure there was nothing on Mars?
Well, okay, science was. People who buy science fiction, not so much.
So they thought like Martians were just like constantly hiding on the other side of Mars that we couldn't see?
I don't think the what were they called? Penny Dreadful buying public was as educated as we expect them to be today.
I wonder though. You really make me wonder.
24-hour news didn't happen until like 1982.
That's a good point.
I mean, like 84.
You had to get runners to carry the news back then. Like,
I wonder though, if you asked 100 people on the street whether there are aliens on Mars, yes, we know there are aliens, no, there we know there are definitely no aliens, or we're not sure. How many would choose we're not sure, or yes, we know there are aliens?
I would say more people would probably choose we're not sure, but...
Even though we are sure.
Right. But there's always a chance we just haven't found them yet.
Right, they could live underground and they're planning their attack. Because the first thing a race of creatures that evolved underground and discovers the surface does is not check out the surface of their own planet. They decide to invade ours.
Well, it worked for the Mole Men, and it worked for the Geonosians.
Geonosians. Nice. Okay, guys, so we've now established that...
people don't care about space.
People don't give a shit about space to the degree that they used to, and sci-fi kind of gives a shit about space, and space explorers kind of give a shit about sci-fi, but not all that much. How do you feel about this common argument? Oh, this is me speaking now. Hey guys, did you see how that Mars rover was going around on Mars and they discovered that there might have been water there at one time? That's me, all happy and excited, and then here's the person I'm speaking to. You know what? How much should we spend for some robot to go to Mars and dig around in the mud? You know, when we could have cured cancer. Or, you know, insert whatever, like, thing we could have solved if we hadn't spent money on space here. Have you guys encountered that? And do you find it as maddening as I do?
The only argument I will accept, speaking of looking inward, is that we should be exploring the oceans first.
Ah.
That's good.
What about you, Ricky? Do you think we should solve every conceivable problem on Earth before we spend another dime on the space program, though?
Absolutely not. But I also know my own temper and know that much like religion and other types of political stances, I do not discuss them with anybody unless I'm trying to piss them off. So... yeah, I'm with you 100%. The real argument is if we don't spend $2 billion to go to Mars, it doesn't mean that $2 billion's going to fucking cancer or curing the homeless or whatever.
Right, right.
It's going to get wasted on something else, so might as well be wasted on something that's worthy.
Why is it worthy?
Explain why it's worthy, Tom.
Well, and then this is where you lose most people. I think that the expansion of human knowledge is always a worthy goal. Always. It's never not a worthy goal. And I think that humanity's future, distant though it may be, lies beyond this planet. And if we're not even willing to take the first baby step in that direction, when are we going to do it? Because we're always going to have problems here on Earth. We're never going to reach this magical moment where we don't have anything to worry about in our own backyard, such that we shouldn't bother looking across the street. You know what I mean?
It's right. Like, how do these assholes not know that there's some kind of Venusian crystal that they can turn into some type of crystallized antenna for your fucking beloved cell phone? And now you get fantastic coverage anywhere, super fast internet speeds. Oh, how much do you hate the fucking space program now? You don't, so shut it.
Right, and I would add to that, shut it.
Venusian crystals.
Venusian crystals. The new iPhone 10 uses Venusian crystals. To that I would add, back in Brian's point, while we're at it, let's also explore the parts of the Earth that we haven't explored yet, because who knows what kind of weird critters or bacteria or chemical shit we're going to find there that's going to lead to some kind of medical breakthroughs. Then we get the medical shit solved. Then we can go to space and you can stop complaining.
Right, and how many people's lives could have been saved because instead of having to use your radium for glow-in-the-dark, we could have used some bioluminescent animal from down in the sea.
Exactly, exactly. And don't even get me into all of the industries and products that have come about as a result of scientific exploration of all kinds, never mind just space exploration.
Right. It's really ignorant to think that it's a narrow roadway. It's anything but, because the slightest... Dude, I wish I had the links I want to have right now to prove of all the stuff that branched off from stuff we learned about trying to get to the moon. I mean, so many other technologies and products were created that make our lives better.
Velcro.
Yeah, perfect, dude. That's the one that was on the tip of my tongue and I couldn't think of it. That in and of itself is gigantic. Imagine your life without Velcro, kids. You can't.
How would you tie your shoes?
It was much more instrumental in the 80s, I'll say. But it's still pretty valuable.
I'm old.
But it's still some type of proof.
Well,
so you're going to say it's okay to spend $1 billion on Velcro?
And Tang. Don't forget Tang.
That's right.
Cool sci-fi stuff, too. I'll say this as well. Another good way to counter that argument is, if space program is something that's important to you, that they're discounting, just turn it around and find something that they like and completely discount that in importance. Oh, you're a sports fan and you think we should spend money to you know, do stadium upgrades so that this team will, you know, do better? Well, that's a waste of money as long as we have other problems to solve. Oh, you know, you're a member of a religious group and they spend money building like beautiful monuments and statues and places of worship. Couldn't that money be better spent, you know, helping the poor? I mean, you can always throw that nonsense back in somebody's face. Because this isn't your pet concern doesn't mean it's not worthy.
I don't have the statistics handy, but I find it very likely that we've actually spent more on sports in the last 10 years than on space.
Yeah, I'm sure we have. I mean, I'm just talking, that's just Wii Sports, never mind like sports at large. So, okay, one final thing, and I think this discussion of sort of the politics around space has motivated this. One of you, I think it was you, Rick, mentioned sort of this notion of cramming this futuristic kind of space age society down people's throats. This clean, precise, like Jetsons-esque society or whatever, or this you know, clean sci-fi setting of the future down people's throat.
Hey, Hotshot, how you doing? We're going to go to the moon one day. We're going to live there, you see? It's going to be awesome.
Well, I was thinking more like this sort of antiseptic future that used to be envisioned, right?
Yeah.
That seems unrealistic because we know human beings are far from antiseptic and, you know, don't necessarily all want to play nicely together. But a lot of sci-fi, a lot of the futures imagined, unless they're dystopian, they're either in some kind of weird dystopian.
It's either future. Blade Runner or 2001.
Right, right. And can we move forward to look? I guess we can move forward into the Blade Runner future with all the miscreants we have now. But is a prerequisite for a real quote unquote space age that like everybody stops being a bunch of like shaved apes and starts like being like productive members of society, you know?
I think that harkens back to the day when scientists were clean cut. I mean, dude, most of the people in the 50s, especially like in NASA and stuff like that, dude, or I don't know when NASA was, but you know what I mean? Engineers and scientists and stuff like that. Any learned people back then were those horn rim glasses, the Brill Cream hair, the white lab coat. And I think that stereotype was pushed onto the living in space type of deal because having to go to space, you needed to have these sanitary conditions and stuff like that. So you had this antiseptic regiment you had to follow in order to get there so you don't contaminate anything, as well as, you know, you just kind of have that stereotypical super clean lab environment and lab coat guy and this and that. So I think it was an offshoot of that.
So it sort of grew out of the fact that scientists and engineers were so part and parcel of the space program.
Right. And, you know, now you've got beards and skinny jeans and Bazinga t-shirts, and those are scientists.
You mean, you want my tax dollars to fund a bunch of space hippies floating around with their long hair and their...
Look, I don't want to go to space Williamsburg. My fucking fixie rocket. It's got one propulsion.
It's Space Billyberg, first of all. Make sure you get it right. And on the spaceship sponsored by PBR, the PBR-1. Ugh. Disgusting space hipsters.
So I think that's where that came from.
Yeah, okay. Brian, do you see the need for a sort of conformist, high-minded society in order for us to advance science and space exploration so that science fiction becomes science fact?
I guess I'm down on people tonight. I must have had a bad weekend. I think it's a symptom of that. I think perhaps those clean-cut, brill-creamed gentlemen had more of a community in mind than what was best for themselves.
Ah, so you're taking the position that our obsession with individuality and expression and, you know, of personal tastes points to sort of a lack of concern for the greater good, maybe.
A selfishness, yes.
Mm. So you don't see us becoming like what was the Star Trek race, Ferengi, and exploring space in that way.
The Ferengi were the merchants, weren't they?
Yeah, they were like the greedy, like what's in it for me merchants. But they somehow became space.
I completely see like some megacorp launching space exploration just to find new customers. Yes.
Okay, but even the megacorporation demands some level of conformity and working towards one goal, right? So, though there might be a greedy individual at the top, the individual is still made to conform to the whole.
We call that being a salaryman.
Oh yeah,
I think people are willing to do that as long as they're paid well enough.
So they're enticed.
As long as they can blow their pay on whatever they want for themselves.
I see.
I think it would end up just being like a space Dubai.
You mean like if wealthy mega corporations exploited space, you would have some kind of like awesome resort up there for only the ultra wealthy or something? Or
yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Interesting.
And then I think people would... It'd be interesting for a while, and then people would lose interest in it simply because it's unobtainable.
I hope, Oh, you mean unobtainable for the average Joe?
Yeah.
Okay. That could be. That reminds me of one final thing I'll make a note of, since you talk about Space Dubai, and that brings to mind billionaires and gazillionaires or whatever. I was listening to that, what's his name, DeGrasse Tyson fellow, that physicist or whatever that everybody likes, who's all about space. And he had a guest on talking about these private companies that are considering towing nearby asteroids in and then mining them for their resources.
Mm-hmm.
And he was speculating that, like, the first generation of, like, trillionaires would result from that because of just the sheer amount of materials that these people would haul back. So I kind of like the concept of us exploiting resources beyond Earth, but I hope it doesn't lead to Space Dubai, as Rick said, because that that sucks. I don't want space Dubai. I want space like Hollywood, Florida, you know, where everybody can go.
But, space 1950s Miami.
There you go. I want space down. I want space everyman town. Well, cool, guys. I think we've had a pretty interesting discussion this evening about space, sci-fi, and non-fi sci. I don't know what the abbreviation is for that.
Reality.
Yeah, and space reality, yeah. With that said, I guess we can ready our rockets to blast off. Before we do, though, before we start the countdown, I want to remind our listeners that they should subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. They should write us a review. And since they have space on their mind, they should rate us 5 stars. And I really can't beseech you enough to rate us and write reviews. It really would help us out, get us up there in the rankings. We'd appreciate that.
And if you don't like the iTunes, you can head on over to www.nerdstravaganza.com. We can download the show, stream the show, rate the show, leave us some comments, all kinds of good stuff.
Or if you really want to be cutting edge, log into this thing called Facebook. It's brand new. It's the best tech in the world. Like our page, join our group, enjoy the conversation, add your own thoughts.
And join us in Space Dubai. I want to be like a space chic in Space Dubai.